I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Life is full of what-ifs, some awesome, like what if AI could fold your laundry? And some, well, less awesome, like what if you have unexpected medical costs? UnitedHealthcare can help get you covered with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. They supplement your primary plan to help you manage out-of-pocket costs. No deductibles, no enrollment periods, and especially no more what-ifs. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Welcome to On the Continent, your definitive guide to the biggest stories in European football. I'm Dotson Adebayo.
I'm Andy Brassel.
And I'm Miguel Delaney.
On this edition, the transfer season's done. Let the consequences begin. Who's done the best business? Who's lost out? And which is the impact transfer that will make the most difference? Also, are PSG the real deal, Holyfield, in this Champions League season? Or did they get found out by Monaco last weekend? And also, 30 years on since the European Cup became the Champions League, what do we think of it so far? So, Andy, we're going to talk transfers, but before that, you've been enjoying some midweek games, haven't you?
Yeah, absolutely. And none more so than Paulo Dybala getting his first couple of Roma goals this week against Silvio Berlusconi's Monza. We always have to preface it with Silvio Berlusconi, of course. The Olympico's full. It's an incredible atmosphere. Mourinho's done something incredible there by filling that stadium. They were a bit fortunate to get Dybala, but they're very pleased to have him. The first goal in particular, just showing what enormous class he still possesses. If he stays fit, they're a danger. The other thing that I've really loved this week is the Lucas Ocampos transfer saga, the on-again, off-again Sevilla to Ajax. He was on a plane to Amsterdam to ink the deal when Ajax's supervisory board decided, actually, we think it's a bit expensive, and sent him back home before it even landed. It seems that that deal might have been revived now. You'll know before us because, we're recording slightly before the Dutch transfer deadline.
But whilst we look back over the transfer window this summer, Miguel, how would you define this year's transfer window?
Well, I mean, you can pick any number of figures. I'm basically touching on anything, a few things that Andy said there. But I suppose, being a journalist immersed in this.
immersed or drowning?
Yeah, drowning, I think. And so Anthony, the price he's gone for is close to double Spain's entire net spend, sorry, La Liga, sort of the top division's entire net spend this summer, which is remarkable given Barcelona. Or else you can go even further than that. Nottingham Forest have what they've spent more than the entire Eredivisie. That might that gap might close a bit as Ajax now spend the Anthony money, but even that's just a fallout. And I know this podcast, obviously, we're specifically not supposed to discuss English football, but there's a knock-on here in that, in a way I don't think we've ever seen before, not even with Serie A in the 90s when it had its, you know, like it's what most people would consider kind of the greatest era of any league ever. We've never seen one competition singularly shape everything else. And that's my one takeaway from this window. We've reached a next stage almost, or an inevitable peak where the entire European football pyramid is narrower than ever. There's England at the top. There's it's not about two or three leagues below that. It's about four or five super clubs. And then there's a straight drop. And even, like, we'll get into this in the show later on, but even talking to agents about, like, where they're advising players of a certain level to go, it's no longer to leagues outside the major leagues. And we'll get, I think it's, there's so much more going on, I suppose, than where players are moving.
Yeah, Andy, I suppose as well, there's a consequence, as Miguel's alluding to, a consequence of teams or agents around the world knowing, for example, that Manchester United, they've got a problem and they've got loads of money.
Yeah, I mean, it's, I think, a short-term disadvantage for Premier League clubs, and one that's existed for a while, in that what bargaining position do you have if you can't say there's a limit to what you can pay? And they can't reasonably say there's a limit to what you can pay. So you could list the transfers, whether it be, as Miguel was saying, whether it's Anthony, whether it's Alexander Isak, you know, whether it's Chelsea buying Fofana from Leicester.
On exactly that, I was talking to someone involved in the Anthony deal on Saturday morning, and they were saying like that, at that point, Ajax's stance basically, we went into this summer window prepared to let, do the usual business model, prepared to let two or three players go and then rebuild the team. There's not too much upheaval. We accept where we are in the natural order of things at the moment, and we can rebuild from there. So that's why they could basically set such a high price for Anthony. And then United actually go beyond that. Because I don't think it was really in their plan to get to lose him this summer. Now, obviously, Anthony's own behaviour changed things. But it got to a point, even though they were adamant they weren't going to sell, they were basically persuaded by the simple sentence, that's a lot of money to leave on a table.
And we've been here before with the Premier League, haven't we? If you think of when Monaco won the title in 2017 and got so far in the Champions League as well, that brilliant Monaco team with Falcao, Bernardo Silva, Mbappe, etc., etc., etc. Their plan at the start of that season was to say, at that start of that summer, I should say, was to lose two players, was to sell Bernardo Silva and was to sell Timur Bakayoko. And they'd sorted that out before the season had ended. And then this offer comes in for Benjamin Mendy, which is a world record fee for a fullback. How do you turn down like 52 million for a left back from Manchester City? And then you open the floodgates, because then how do you say no to the rest of the players? You've sold the vision to the rest of those players. And obviously, from a financial standpoint, this is incredibly beneficial to these clubs. You know, for a long time, a lot of clubs in France, particularly, also Portugal, maybe we're getting there in Spain eventually, and certainly in Germany, are saying, right, okay, maybe we could take the view that these Premier League clubs are playing a different sport. We could also take the view that we will accept their inflated bids for our players, take that money, and with our strategy, we're going to rebuild. And we're going to do well from here. And we've seen clubs do that before. But I think this is the issue that Ajax were always struggling to keep a lid on with Anthony. You know, they'd already sold like five, six first-teamers this summer. And then when you let a player go, whatever the fee, whatever the financial benefit, whatever the inability to refuse a deal that good, all of a sudden, other players have said, oh, well, I will stay for this season. They're going to want to go as well. Because that's what happened with Mbappe, for example. He went into summer 2017 intending originally to stay with Monaco. Yeah. And then after they've said they'll sell two players and all of a sudden it's four first teamers,
You're wasting a year of career, basically.
Exactly. That is the feeling.
of course, it's not just all about Anthony. Paquetá as well. Decent signing, you would have thought. He's one of the headlines from over there playing over here now.
And it's remarkable to me how you get... that. If anything shows the incredible power of the Premier League, it's that a West Ham...
yeah,
can go and sign someone who is a mainstay of the Brazil 11.
We'll get into this, but even the fact that now Chelsea are close to double the size of AC Milan. AC Milan very much in italics there. Mm. I mean, this is one of Europe's most storied clubs. And we'll get into this in the discussion of what the Champions League is now. But I just find that such a... I mean, we were talking this off air, but basically football foreshadowing society, I think, in how there's so many structural inequalities built into it, and we're getting to the point now where it's beginning to creak, and you're seeing
cost
really
cost of
tangible.
Living crisis creaking.
I suppose it manifests in a different way, more so that it's affecting its competitiveness essentially. So in the same way, I suppose it's the lifeblood of the sport. It's affecting that.
Look, we've had a lot of comments on social media about the transfer window, as you'd expect. You can get in touch with us at any time during the course of the week at Football Ramble, at Dotton Adebayo, at Andy Brasson, at Miguel Delaney. This is from Alex on Twitter, who says, which teams in the top five leagues, and you can throw in some others for fun, have had the best and the worst windows? Who's done well and who's done less well for you?
I think Dortmund have had a good window. I think we're only going to start to see that over the next little while because, of course, Sebastian Haller becoming ill is something that couldn't have been foreseen. It's good to see him out and about at the Eredivisie Awards. Quite an emotional moment for him, but he seemed positive and he said he's feeling good, which is a great thing, obviously. But at the start of the season, one of their other big signings, Niklas Süle, remember a centre-back that Bayern Munich actually wanted to keep, but chose to go to Dortmund instead. He's been out injured a bit at the start of the season, coming back now. Salih Özcan, their midfield anchor, who was a cheap signing from Köln, but it's going to be brilliant for them. And they needed an anchor in front of that defence. Dortmund have made their team a lot younger. I still think it's a pinch for them to challenge Bayern at the top. But in terms of the fact that they've signed the players they needed to, they've signed young players, and they've signed players, if you look at Süle, and if you look at Karim Adeyemi and Nico Schlotterbeck, really signed the spine of the Germany team going forward. So I think there's a sense that they might have to take up half a step back to actually go forward eventually. I think they've had a very good window, and that'll start to become evident over the next couple of months.
There's an interesting dynamic there relevant to what we're all talking about as well, whereas bar Sadio Mane, Bayern have had to actually recalibrate their own transfer strategy because of the Premier League. Because now the Premier League basically just takes what used to be Bayern's most obvious fishing ground, which was all the best players in the clubs around them.
Yeah.
So now they've had to kind of go, they've had to go a completely different route, which is almost kind of the Dortmund route, and hence explained by trying to kind of, you know, take recruitment figures from Dortmund and other clubs. I mean, that potentially could create a little bit of flux in German football itself. But you mentioned Roma as well, Andy. I mean, the one thing you could say there is, suppose, I mean, we wait and see how they're going to do. But you can't deny Mourinho's, and I've it's been discussed in the pod before. I do kind of I'm not sure Mourinho's football is the most modern, though. We'll see whether he evolves. But he has kind of created a life around the club again.
His magnetism is real still.
Yeah, and
Italy at least.
And it does feel like, I mean, it feels like one of those old-fashioned Mourinho windows where he'd get two or three players into certain positions, very forensically doing them, but suddenly kind of just amplify the whole team.
I mean, in a way, though, that they've been the beneficiary, Miguel, of these market forces that we were talking about, because as you were saying, there being two different transfer markets, really, the Premier League and the rest of Europe, which I think is absolutely true. The fact that this year, that I think, Dotton, that the biggest thing about this year's transfer market is there have been so many like big A-list free agents who have struggled to get the deal they wanted.
Dybala that you mentioned earlier on.
Exactly.
That's amazing.
He's a great example. And you look at him and Andrea Belotti, who's just signed, of course, had a 100 million euro buyout clause at Torino, which a few clubs had a look at and were really close to taking in previous years, run out of contract, and has gone to Roma on a free, but only signed once the season has already started, because they were waiting for a few other bits to fall into place before they wanted to commit the money for him. They've signed him to quite an unusual contract. They've signed him to a one-year contract with an option of two if certain club achievements are met, like Champions League, etc., etc., etc. But I think for a player like Belotti, proven goal scorer at top level, good for Italy, European Championship winner, in a previous transfer window, he gets snapped up in a flash, and that he has to wait, that Dybala has to revise his, and I realise he's had some injuries, but he's still a magnificent player, and he's still only, what, 28? That he's had to revise his salary expectations. That shows you what the market is, doesn't it, really?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, also, the free agent thing, I mean, okay, it's not completely relevant to what you're talking about, but this is another recent and evolving dynamic in the window where, basically, and I suppose Haaland has really set the trend for Mohamed Salah was also thinking about it, where players are gradually realising, given the money that's spent on transfer fees, players and their agents, or rather the camps, are realising, given the money spent on transfer fees, let our contract run down and more of that comes to us, which is very much a new dynamic. And I suppose it ties into the kind of direction of travel of European football as well.
I mean, it is a bit like Del Boy, he who dares wins, isn't it? Really, if I think we're kind of heading towards that, which we touched on a few times before, that sort of era of the freelance footballer. Jesse Lingard, actually, to take a Premier League example, is quite a good example of that. You know, going to Forest for a year and seeing how it's going. Belotti's new deal is an example of that. Of course, you've got to hedge it against what happens if I get injured. Even Dybala's deal, you know, if Roma don't make the Champions League, he can leave for €20 million at the end of the season, which would still be a bargain for someone like him. I want to go back briefly to Alex's question, though. I know we've been all over the place here. But in terms of the worst window, I would immediately say, I think Sporting losing their central midfield, albeit for an enormous amount of money. And again, that goes back to the theme of the Premier League, losing Palinha to Fulham, Matheus Nunes to Wolves. You know, that really shows where the power is. A Champions League club having their central midfield taken away of two really good players who will be good for Portugal in the World Cup going forward. That's been tough for them. I think Galatasaray have had an interesting one. I think we'll only retrospectively be able to judge whether that's best or worst, because they've spent, especially on wages, quite a lot of money. Seferovic, Lucas Torreira on a permanent, Dries Mertens, if only for a year, maybe Icardi. You know, and Sergio Oliveira, who won the Conference League with Roma last season on loan from Porto. All of this is a lot of commitment, especially when you consider the new Turkish TV deal is worth a third of the last one. I just don't know where the money's really coming from. So I guess that's going to, you know, we're only going to be able to know in, I think, a year's time whether they were brave and it worked, or whether they took a massive gamble and it's hugely backfired.
Unless you want to add to the best and worst business of this summer transfer window, Miguel, I've got another question on Instagram here from Eddie, who says, how does Antony, that we've been talking about, fit into Manchester United?
Well, I mean, it's a very interesting one, because Manchester United would appear to have a fair few of that type of player, kind of tricky wingers who come inside. But, I mean, Ten Hag, this is one of those situations where whatever we speculate, ultimately, Ten Hag knows him better than anyone. Because I suppose one of the unknowns with Antony, I mean, he is a player, with just a 1-3 goal record, who's very young, 21, and only has kind of two years of limited experience in European football. So it's very hard to know even how he's going to adapt, or whether Ten Hag will, because one thing I have been told is that Ten Hag, from his first two games, which explains some of his approach in the last two matches where the United won, was that he was a bit stunned by the real rise in quality in the bottom half of the Premier League. And again, this ties into everything we're talking about. So he had to kind of recalibrate himself a little bit. Now, I suppose you can probably see Antony as a player who can unlock things in that regard. I suppose everyone is well aware of the footage of the way he can manipulate a ball. But it's going to be, especially when you think that United's, what they needed more than anything basically was essentially a number nine. But I suppose there aren't too many of those about.
I think that's the issue, really. I think if you look at United's squad, look at how they could get more out of almost everyone there. I think that's what this signing is based upon. If you're moving towards ultimately some sort of Ten Hag-ish 4-3-3, and you've got Anthony Wright coming in on his left foot, Sancho on the left coming in on his right foot, and Rashford or Martial, who they really need to work on both in the centre, then you've got your front three. I think Anthony will be okay. I think there's a huge ceiling for him. I think he'll make an impact straight away. But I think the good thing about him is he can get better and better and better. He can handle himself. He won't be intimidated and kicked out of games, despite the fact he's smaller. And I think that's super important because he's going to have a lot of eyes on him. But going back to, I guess, the two biggest signings in the Premier League of the last week, both Brazilians, him and Lucas Paquetá. I think Paquetá will make the more instant impact. One, because he'll stand out more in a West Ham team. And bear in mind, this was a guy that Manchester City would have taken had Bernardo Silva gone. Of course, there wasn't the money to take him elsewhere. So for the second successive summer, Bernardo was considering a move away. I think he would have liked to, not that he hates it at City or anything, he's fine at City, but he would like to try something different. He's quite an adventurous man of the world kind of guy. So Paquetá's a huge lift in quality for what West Ham are. Makes tackles, wins the ball, can play the last pass, can score goals, can go around players. He's going to be so entertaining. And again, is coming from, actually, unlike Anthony, he's coming from a more physical league. So I think he'll be able to handle himself and hit the ground running pretty quickly.
Casi seis y medio de la prórroga. Parece que le va a pegar Ronald Koeman. Le va a pegar Koeman, le pega Koeman, gol, gol del Barça, gol de Koeman, ha marcado el Fútbol Club Barcelona.
Let's talk about something slightly different. PSG, just when you thought that they were ready, having had what you describe as a sensible transfer window, Andy, just when
it pains me to say that.
Well, nevertheless,
it's true.
Just when you thought that they were fit for purpose, the purpose being to win the Champions League, they go and draw 1-1 against Monaco. Does that show perhaps the creaks in PSG?
Well, we've got every reason with what's happened with PSG over the last few years to be, you know, we want to look ahead for clues of what's going to happen in the Champions League. And we have reason to question them because Monaco are the first really good opposition that they've played this season. And Monaco came at them with a plan. And it largely worked. I mean, you know, I'm sure you'd have seen the highlights, listeners, and, you know, they hit the woodwork a couple of times, came back well in the second half, PSG.
At least a couple of times.
A couple of times in one move.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. That was a good one.
Yeah, it was. But I think what was interesting is how Monaco approached it. Because Monaco played very, very bravely. They were super aggressive, especially in the first half. Not a lot of teams are going to dare like that, to play like against them like that when you know that Kylian Mbappe's over your shoulder. You're going to press high with Mbappe over your shoulder. It was pretty daring, and it worked. I mean, they cut Renato Sanchez out of the game on his first start. He couldn't get involved at all. What I thought was quite interesting when we talked about that that sensible transfer window that PSG have had. I mean, the main difference is the midfield. So they brought in Renato Sanchez, Fabian Ruiz is just joining. It looks like Carlos Soler is coming from Valencia too. But the one really is Vitinha, who we've talked about a couple of times already, who arrived from Porto, who is kind of to play with Verratti, but insurance policy against Verratti's Verratti-isms as well of suspensions and injury. And, you know, they were far too reliant on him in the past. I mean, he's had some magnificent nights in the Champions League, but you just can't trust his availability.
Yeah.
This was, because he was suspended, and hats off, is an incredible effort being suspended for accumulation of yellow cards in August. Vitinha was badly missed in this game. And I think it's shown what balance he's brought to the team.
This sensibility, though, it's also, for me, and from what... because I'm planning to write something on PSG as soon as there's a big enough Champions League game, basically. but they've got Juventus in a few weeks.
Yeah, sorted.
But where Di Maria's gone, of course, and that's relevant to what I'm going to say, I suppose, where it's a sensible transfer, but also I think part of very much a transitional spell that could go on 2 or 3 years, which could bring some impatience, because ultimately, I suppose, this is all about recalibrating not just the team, but the entire squad around Mbappe and what he wants. As everyone's seen the kind of the reports about his relationship with Neymar now, but there's something bigger there in the sense that, from what I've been told, part of the discussions in the summer, and of course, these are central to Mbappe signing a new deal, is also that he wants, he would at least be better disposed toward a squad that is full of young, hungry players that can press, and away from this kind of star system. Mm. Now, I suppose a more cynical person could say, because there's only room for one star here.
Yeah.
And even the kind of the interest in Marcus Rashford, which was very genuine, that was all about because PSG would see him as someone who they can refashion into essentially a runner for Mbappe as he moves centrally when Messi goes next year. And it feels like Galtier, even though I think what he's doing is very sensible with the team, but it's at the start of this process. And I suppose not for the first time at PSG, almost trying to fit things between various politically motivated pressures.
Yeah, I mean there are a couple of ways of looking at this, really, aren't there? Because Mbappe wanted influence before signing again, a lot of people, it's kind of been willfully misinterpreted in some case, yeah, of he's the de facto sporting director. So basically he had to come out and say, look, I'm a player, I'll always be just a player. And it's like, well, that's slightly disingenuous as well, isn't it? Because he's more than a player. You know, he's a figurehead for Paris, and he's a figurehead for Paris Saint-Germain, as well as being a figurehead for French football. And him staying in French football has been very warmly received by rival managers. There's no concern about competitive balance within the league.
It's a depressing situation, that, isn't it?
It is, but I think because they came so close to absolute financial meltdown,
yeah,
I think that's part of it as well. Like Messi arrived at the right time. All of a sudden they could sell like foreign TV rights, yeah, and yeah, stuff like that. I don't think it's too dramatic to say that Messi arriving, even if it's been slightly underwhelming on the pitch, saved a few clubs, you know, who were in serious problems after the media pro deal, yeah, fell
so
through.
You're talking about French clubs in general beyond PSG.
Yeah, absolutely. But I think French football has had this feeling for a while, even before that meltdown. Because when Ibrahimovic arrived, it wasn't right, okay, they're going to fly away with the league now, and this guy's an absolute giant. It was, oh, he's going to play in our stadiums. That's great. More people will be watching French football, not more people will be watching PSG win 4-0 at Clermont or whatever, which is quite an interesting attitude. But to go back to Mbappe briefly, I think there's a difference between him having influence and micromanaging everything. Of course he has influence. And I think you look at all these signings and they're very Luis Campos, Christophe Galtier signings. So clearly they are being listened to and they have a level of authority. And you've seen that level of authority by the way that Christophe Galtier has gone with, say, Icardi or other players that he doesn't consider important. Look, all the best to you, but you're not in my squad. Go and train with the kids. I'm not interested in you. And that was not something that, say, Pochettino ever did or felt empowered to do. But the reason that Luis Campos and Galtier are there is, of course, because they're Mbappe approved, because they align with the same vision. That doesn't mean he's micromanaging everything, but it does mean that PSG, you could argue that their interests align with Mbappe's vision. But it's in their interest that their vision aligns with Mbappe's.
Of course, and it's vital in all of this that we're talking about with Campos and Galtier. It's vital that those two work together. Otherwise, it doesn't make sense, I would have thought.
Well, the other side of that is Enrique as well, isn't it? So, I mean, there are still...
they've been kind of ganging up on him, haven't they?
There's still residual politics at PSG.
But the question, when you look at that midfield of Carlos Sola, Fabian Ruiz, added to Vitinha and Renato Sanchez, it does look formidable, as they would say. However, I just wonder if the chinks in their attempts to win the Champions League finally are being shown, are being exposed by the likes of Monaco.
I'm not sure about that. I mean, I suppose, but again, just because even the psychology of a league game is so different, and it should be stressed, to a Champions League knockout game, not a group stage game. And also, I mean, it's something I can't help thinking as well. I mean, both Bayern and PSG drew at the weekend. They've been the two most dominant clubs at Manchester City over the past 5 years there, especially with Juventus's drop off. And if we're seeing like Monaco are... the second last team, the last team other than Lille to win the French title, other than PSG. And if we're talking about them, not be like, well, what does it say for PSG in the league if this is held as some kind of great problem or revelation? Monaco hold them to a draw where they really had to kind of push themselves to the maximum, both tactically and in terms of effort.
An interesting thing I was going to say, Don, something you were pointing out to me off air, Donnarumma looking a little bit malleable. And when Miguel, you talk about moving away from that star system, it is quite deeply entrenched. Because I know there's a difference. We talk about younger and the future and the age profile. When they go with Donnarumma, and you know, Keylor Navas might still leave this week, they've gone with the wrong goalkeeper. Navas is the right goalkeeper, despite the age thing.
But this is the other thing with PSG, is when no matter the power at that kind of mid-level in terms of making the football decisions, there's also a whole other thing going on, right? And which is also multi-layered, which is obviously the emir right at the top, who still watches training from time to time. Then there's the kind of the Qatari-linked power underneath that, where he does, even underneath Nasser, there's all sorts of kind of figures with their own power bases. And like I was talking to one previous PSG coach about this, and he was saying that anytime he'd drop a player, now I suppose all of this is an attempt to move away from this, but again, it's going to take time. Anytime he'd drop certain players, they just complain to kind of directors who are friendly towards them or more disposed towards them. And that's a cultural thing that isn't solved immediately.
Alcorta, Valdo. Ginola qui a dribblé Sanchez, échappe au tacle de Chendo, retrait pour George Weah et but de George Weah après 32 minutes de jeu. Le Paris Saint-Germain ouvre le score, centre de Ginola, but de Weah.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
This episode of the Football Ramble is sponsored by BetterHelp. Life throws many different challenges at us, and as a result, we all have our own sources of stress. Whether big or small, those stresses can impact our lives in unpredictable ways, and if we don't address them, they can have an outsized and unwanted impact. Therapy is a safe place in which we can address these issues, learn to understand them, and find ways to work through them. Having therapy can be beneficial to anybody, not just people who've experienced major traumas, even if you may have not considered it before. It could be simply a time for you to get things off your chest, a way to learn positive coping skills, or how to set boundaries. Ultimately, it can be whatever you need it to be. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. All you have to do is fill out a brief questionnaire and BetterHelp will match you to a licensed therapist. You can even switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/ramble today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/ramble.
We've been tip-tapping around the whole issue of the Champions League, which is about to begin. Your thoughts, both of you, on the draw, first of all. There is one perhaps obvious group of death. We'll talk about that in a moment. But there are big ties and also big groups to draw attention to in general. Is there too much of a divide, though? When you look at the draw as it is there too much of a divide between the haves and the haves not this year?
Oh, I mean, It's not this year. It's that this year is the next evolution of a process that's been going on 30 years. And we're now at the point where, put bluntly, the group stage is not proper sporting competition. It's a balance sheet in that this has been the trend of the last 10 years. 14 or 15 of the 16 wealthiest clubs are all going to go through. And if it conforms to the trends of the last 10 years, we might have one, maybe two places up for grabs on the last day of the Champions League. And I don't think it really is kind of back in the day or like when I was a teenager, football was better, to say that it was a more preferable situation when the Champions League group stages, we had multiple positions going right to the wire. That's what it should be about. And hence, they're going to change the group stage in 2 years' time to the Swiss system.
It's very weird, isn't it, to think it was maybe more competitive when there were two group stages?
I know. Yeah. It's remarkable.
Is it like I saw somebody say on social media this week, are we really talking about a European Super League by default? You know, we'll pretend it's not really that, but actually we know that the next round will essentially be that if we're following Miguel's line of thinking.
Yeah, I mean, I think the money has been an issue, particularly on wages, really. It's about wage bills rather than fees, and that's something that can get twisted, I think, in the transfer window particularly. Because if you look at, let's take Bayern as an example. They are a team that has spent over 40 million euros on a player three times in their history, which does not seem like a lot, which would put them, I guess, in the second half of the Premier League, really, wouldn't it? Almost. Maybe at a kind of Leicester City kind of level. You know, and you think the two players, they spent 43.5 on Corentin Tolisso, euros, and then they spent nearly twice that on Luca Hernandez and Matthijs de Ligt, who are both defenders. Which is remarkable, but it's about the wages. The other issue here, particularly with this year's draw, is you look at some of the teams who we would expect to hit hard and, you know, like at least inconvenience the elite, the favourites for the competition. I think you're looking at, so we touched on it before, Dortmund are in a bit of a transitional phase. Ajax and Napoli have lost a lot of key players this summer, and it feels like a sort of changing of the guard there. Sevilla have been all over the place because they couldn't move and do anything until they sold Diego Carlos eventually to Aston Villa and Jules Koundé to Barcelona. So those clubs that we expect to at least titillate the teams at the top are maybe not in the position to do so. So, yeah. So say if you look at that group with Manchester City, for example. In previous years, if they're stuck in with Sevilla and Dortmund, City are still the favourites. But you think, okay, there's scope for something to go wrong there. I don't think there really is this year.
Yeah, you know what? That's a good way of putting it. And it's almost like European football's, or sorry, the Champions League's upper middle class has actually been wiped out this year. Just because it's actually a classic example.
Atletico.
Atletico, Ajax, all these clubs that have performed well in recent years. And it's also why I think an outside chance for a surprise could actually be Rangers. to get through that group.
You think so?
Yeah, Napoli have lost a spine of the team. Ajax have lost a spine of the team. Both have to kind of restructure. There's unknowns about them. And at the very least, they're vulnerable.
I agree. I think the two Scottish teams are actually... It would not stun me if both Scottish teams got through into the last 16.
Yeah.
Because I agree with your point on Rangers totally. And I think more importantly, their form in Europe, going back before Van Bronckhorst, they can handle the big games. They can handle the big ties. They manage them very well. Also, I think if you look at the group, I think you can look at Celtic facing Real Madrid first up at Parkhead.
I'm going to that. Looking forward to it.
What a game. So, what a game. Yeah, what a night that's going to be. You're a lucky man. and I think if you look at that group, Leipzig are looking at a change of strategy. You know, they've gone and bought back Timo Werner and they spent nearly 30 mil on David Raum this summer as well, which is a departure for them. And they've been struggling to keep some players like Emil Forsberg, for example, happy, and I think they'll probably find that with Andre Silva down the line. So they're in a bit of a state of flux. Obviously, what's happened to Shakhtar is completely out of their control,
of course,
following the invasion of Ukraine. But you know, we think of Shakhtar of being blessed with great Brazilian players. They've got three overseas players in their squad this year, and we really don't know what to expect from them. So I think Celtic can have a reasonable pop at that second place.
But Rangers, look at the group they're in. So Celtic in Group F, Rangers in Group 8, facing Ajax, Liverpool and Napoli. They're going to have a really hard time trying to get out of that group.
Maybe, but I think there's such a changeover at Napoli and Ajax. You know, both of those have lost like four or five key players out of their 11. And so that is, I think, an opportunity for Rangers. I think you also look at the fact, going back to the same thing that keeps coming up about Premier League power, if you've got one absolute ultra favourite in the group, that polarises
the
rest of the group. I think you can probably say that for Tottenham's group as well, with Eintracht Frankfurt, Sporting and Marseille, who are all difficult on their day. And those are three amazing away trips for Tottenham fans, course, by the way. Yeah. If there are any Tottenham fans listening, get yourself out there. You'll have a great time. I think you look at those, and that is going to be an almighty scrap for that second place, I think.
Should I tell you a funny story? Funny aside, my plumber, who lived down the road from me, he's just separated from his wife, and he thinks it was one of those away trips for Tottenham when they were in the Champions League previously. Anyway, genuinely, he's gutted about it, but nevertheless.
Well, at least he's free to go to any of these.
Yeah.
He is now.
Take your pick.
He'll be delighted, I'm sure. I think it was Portugal that cost him the last time. I could be wrong. Anyway, just talking of this, Dara on Insta says, Barca have got a tough Champions League group. How important is European success financially to them? They are, as you've been mentioning, in Group C, which I guess is the group of death. Are we all agreed on that?
Yeah. I think that's fair.
Well, I suppose, I mean, this actually articulates the risk for Barcelona, probably better than anything else, in that I know it's been a debate of the summer, and some of the Catalan or Spanish-based media have been resistant to what they would see as English criticism of Barcelona. one of the issues for me has been, and like I think we all accept Barcelona were in a difficult situation. So it's really about the path out and the way they went out, or the way that they would, the way they've sought to go out of it. But one of the issues for me, I suppose, it's not just that they've kind of... Because obviously they have to stabilise and recalibrate the squad. But they haven't just recalibrated it. They are kind of sought to bring in kind of like one or two players, or maybe a Lewandowski, on top of a really good youth structure. They've spent, I think, what is it now? It's a third of their overall debt to Goldman Sachs in one summer. So they owe 600 million in 10 years, and they're spending 200 million this summer. And what? And that is predicated on... There is a logic to it, but I would say it's a very risky logic. It's predicated on the potential commercial returns of being a glamorous team always in big competitive games. That's what this is. And of course, none being more glamorous than the Champions League ladder stages. And then suddenly they're placed in what everyone sees as probably the most difficult group of the lot, with three giants. What is it? Something like 5-5-5-2, 5-5-3 13 European Cups between them, and then Pilsen there. But even Pilsen actually creates makes a difficult situation, because you would think everyone would get 6 points off them, and then
if you drop anything, it's a disaster.
This is it, exactly. And if you've won a great game, which Barca can be prone to do, so as we saw in the opening game of the season against Rayo, where they can pepper someone, and it just, you know, because the way they play naturally leads teams to have a kind of a low block approach against them, and sometimes you can have one of those games, and it does kind of articulate the risk here for Barcelona. If so much is predicated on being an ultra glamorous team and the commercial returns of that, so I mean, football can have a way of kind of conspiring against you in that way, and one way has been the literal look of the draw here.
I mean, but Bayern and Inter have had their issues in this summer's market. I think it's fair to say, and there's in recent days Simone Inzaghi, the Inter coach, has been a little anxious about getting at least one more defender on board, but you have to look at them, the players they have, and the fact that they're more established, grounded, know each other better. You know, on paper, these are two better teams than Barcelona. So I think that is a thing. But what you were saying, Miguel, there about the idea of, you know, shooting for the stars, that is the Joan Laporta mantra.
Yeah.
You know, that's what he did the first time at Barcelona, that speculate to accumulate thing in his first spell. He's just doing it with much bigger numbers this time.
Yeah, exactly.
That's the reason you sign Lewandowski, for example. Not because the team really needs him. Okay, he's very nice to have. He's still a great goal scorer. No one's denying that. But if you look at the forwards they already have...
He's a star.
He's a star. Yeah. And Laportistas will look at the first couple of games of the season and go, look, we filled it up when we play Valladolid. Whereas if you go back 10 months, we were getting 40,000 in the pissing rain against Benfica in the Champions League.
And even that is a bit of a short-term view, though. Because, I mean, in light of this, I was looking at Ferran Soriano's book, and his thinking was central to Laporta's 20 years ago. And Ken Early did a very good article on this. And Soriano talks exactly about the kind of choices in that situation in 2003. And 2003, I suppose, wasn't as existential a threat as it was now. And one is that you can just cut back spending, you know, trim your squad and build slowly. But then that's just not what Barcelona do. And, you know, and he referred to, and it's a phrase that's been used a lot in football now, and actually refers to what the Champions League is in itself for the big clubs, a virtuous cycle, where the more you're in the biggest games, the more kind of glamorous you are, the more commercial revenue you get, and on and on and on until you're kind of dominating all the stars. But the one thing I've thought about in all this, and some of this actually applies to Manchester United as well, because of all this, and because the need to be just kind of the centre of it all the time, clubs, they don't really believe in fallow years anymore, do they? Even though a fallow year can be, or a kind of a rebuilding period, can be the best possible thing for a team.
Exactly. I think it's really interesting when you consider that Barcelona, partly for sponsorship reasons, align themselves so closely with the Golden State Warriors. They're like, we're the Warriors of football, and they're the Barcelona of basketball. But like the Warriors were fine with having their fallow year. And the Warriors, if you look at the way that they've run in terms of moving into a big new arena, in terms of betting heavily on the star model and sticking with Steph Curry and Klay Thompson, they've aligned themselves in a similar way in a lot of ways. And they've not had problem paying big wages, big bills, etc., etc., etc. But they were fine with having that fallow year. And that, seemingly to Barcelona, was the worst possible idea, despite the fact they had loads of young players, which would have allowed... immense quality, which would have allowed them to go back to leaning on their brand, actually, wouldn't it?
Exactly. Whereas instead, they've actually kind of eroded some of their brand values, essentially. The romance of Barca's gone.
They've become more Real Madrid than Galactico's era Real Madrid.
Got a question for you from Andrew on Twitter. He asks, any teams in the Europa League or the Conference League that play an interesting style or have a nice story are otherwise worth keeping an eye on? We've been talking about the big names. Talk about some of the others now. Anybody come to mind?
Well, look, I think there are two that I'd look at straight away, both in English teams groups. We would be doing Lars Sivertsen dirty if we didn't mention Bodø Glimt. almost the last team to qualify for the Champions League. You know, they're 3 minutes away from a penalty shootout against Dinamo Zagreb, which could have seen them through, and it would have been an extraordinary story.
Amazing.
To see them in the Champions League.
Unbelievable story.
And now they're in that group with Arsenal, that they're really interesting to watch. And I look forward to Lars taking us through them in greater detail in the coming weeks. The other, post Alexander Isak, talking of irrefusable deals.
Glad you brought him back into the conversation, actually. I think that's an amazing deal.
I think it's a really interesting deal. Again, very high ceiling. Like Anthony, Newcastle are paying for the next couple of years. They're not just paying for now. I think he'll eventually be great for them. But it gives Real Sociedad a lot of latitude. And, you know, maybe look at them for a couple of late deals if you're listening to this. They're not hampered like their neighbours from Athletic are only bringing in Basque players. I mean, they will always say, because Athletic nicked our the best Basque players and our players, we were forced to go out and... Yeah. Except foreigners.
That was the John Aldridge, Dalian Atkinson.
Exactly. Yeah. Kevin Richardson, all of those. But they will actually go out into the market and buy overseas players. And they've got lots of exciting attacking players anyway.
It's time to ask you, both of you, to suggest a game of the week, or each of you. One game each, please.
I will go for Osasuna, Rayo Vallecano. Any opportunity to bring up my local team in Spain.
Why not?
But it's also, I think it's an interesting contrast week, all the more so because Osasuna actually started the season really well with two wins before last week's defeat. And also there's a contrast in the sense that, as Andy put it earlier when we were off air, it's basically one of Spain's most combustible clubs in Rayo Vallecano against one that, like Osasuna are genuinely, they're actually a model club. They're how a club should be run. Potentially, and I'm stealing a point off Rory Smith, actually, here, I should give him credit there. They're kind of like, they do represent a kind of a future path for other clubs, especially in everything we're talking about, financial disparity, how it's affecting the game. Osasuna do have an advantage, and this is actually little known, in that they're one of the four Spanish clubs who are member-owned, along with the three famous ones, Madrid, Barca, and Athletic Bilbao. But also, they've got an incredible youth policy. Athletic Bilbao actually regularly stripped them of players, so not that popular in the area for that. Play a good brand of football now, a good technical brand, and also it's kind of renowned as a place that's so difficult to go to. They're at home this weekend, and it's also given that we're not at the point where a league has yet taken shape, and we don't know where, you know, who's in the mix for what. It's a good time, I think, to focus on games like this.
And Chimi Avila is actually fit at the moment. Yeah, so drink it in while you can.
But talking of drinking, what are we going to eat with it?
I'd go for some chistorra.
Chistorra, what's that?
Chistorra, it's basically kind of a spicy pork from the area. Sort of similar to chorizo, but you'd eat it warm and has a great sauce around
it. It's funny, I once missed the bull run at Pamplona by mere minutes because we were on our way to the start line at about, I guess it would be.
You were not going to run in front of the bulls, though.
That was the plan.
No.
We were all going to get involved.
Yeah.
And it was about 6:45 in the morning, and we saw La Casa de Jamón on the way, and that distracted us, and we missed our mark. It was worth it.
It was
worth it.
What about a game of the week from you?
I'm going to go nice and simple. Saturday night, Milan derby, Milan versus Inter. Milan have got a new young star on their hands in Charles de Ketelere, who just turned up from Club Brugge after painstaking negotiations. Looked brilliant on his full debut against Bologna last week. Look forward to seeing a lot more of him. And obviously no Ibrahimovic versus Lukaku because they're both injured. Inter have had a few little issues, but when you bear in mind that you know, they were able to sweep past Cremonese this week because they can always call on Joaquin Correa, they can call on Edin Dzeko. They've got so many options up front. And Alexis Sanchez, of course, got a couple of his first couple of goals for Marseille in that previous game of the week, Nice Marseille last week. They've got that. Inter have got like an incredible midfield still as well. So it's going to be a real clash of the Titans. I think because of blackout rules, you missed the first 15 minutes. So I think you can get yourself...
pasta or pizza.
Yeah, you can get yourself... I guess it's Saturday night in front of the telly. It's got to be a pizza of quality, some sort of a thin-based margarita. Let's not overcomplicate things. And make sure you've got everything ready in that first 15 minutes before you actually get to watch the game.
Are you getting Domino's?
Jesus.
Cartilage is going to get you for that. Come on.
The Football Ramble is a Stack production and part of the Acast Creator Network.
Small details are big surfaces. Tight corners are odd shapes. Flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
I'm Ina Garten. Welcome to Be My Guest, the podcast. One of the best gifts you can give friends is spending time together. But what's even better than that? Cooking with them. On Be My Guest, the podcast, new friends and old stop by my barn for some conversation and great cooking. We talk about food, life, and everything in between. Listen to Be My Guest, the podcast with me, Ina Garten, and join us wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.